Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chods. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
Hello, good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you're listening to this from. Welcome, episode 71 of the Carpcast. How is Mark today?
I'm fine. I caught a carp yesterday, have I mentioned?
I thought you were going to mention that. But before we mention that, how do you feel, given the fact that Derek the Crazy Don moved into your swim this morning? I've just seen a video of him with four fish on the bank at the same time out the swim you just left last about midnight last night.
Oh, it must be all the preparation I've done for him.
Yeah, you primed it, haven't you? You caught the hardest one in the lake to catch, and he had a lump in the net. He had two in nets and two in the slings.
Yeah, he did. He's got his timing right. You know, there was a fish in the area while I was there, and, you know, caught one on a zig. The bottom bait didn't do anything, but, you know, the Don's gone in there. He's fished this way before. He's caught well. He's caught from there before. He's gone in and he's done what the Don does, and fair play.
He's not called the Don for nothing, is he?
No.
No, I mean, it's all jokes aside, it's a new lake for you. Some lakes are quite spotty, I've found, and like you can fine tune the spots over experience and time, and then somebody else, you know, you can have three or four fish out of it over a few days. Somebody else can go in the swim, not catch. You can go straight back in it and have two, three, four bites again, and you know, it's not like a testament to the angler skill. It's just physically knowing the spots. And there was a swim on, I've told this a number of times on here, but there's a swim on Wire Lake years ago called The Bench. Well, the swim's still there, but I was on there years ago, and it was known as a big fish swim, The Bench, and I could not get a bite out of that swim. All the people would catch out of it. I tried everything. Anyway, I decided one autumn, I was fishing sort of 3 days a week, I decided I was only going to fish that swim till I'm stubborn. I decided I was going to catch a fish out of that swim. And, you know, one of the banker spots that somebody told me about, I don't know if I ever caught a fish off that spot. Anyway, I ended up finding, like lots of people knew where the spots were, but I ended up finding the bit of a spot to get a bite in. One second, my parcel has just arrived. Timing, one sec. Many apologies for that interruption. It was our Carpcast flyers and VIP holiday flyers arriving in the post. They look very good. There's pictures of you, Mark, on these.
Yeah. I thought you said they look good.
Good shout. Quick. Yeah, what was I saying about then? I was determined to catch fish out of it. Anyway, I ended up fine-tuning a couple of spots, and it got to the point where we were allowed to use three. Were we allowed to use four rods in the autumn? I can't remember. I'd say three rods. I had four spots going anyway that I pretty much got a bite off every session, like over 48 hours or 72 hours. And then the same thing happened. People would be going in that swim after me, knowing that I'd caught four or five fish, and they weren't catching over the weekend. I'd come back on the Monday and have four or five fish again. And it was just bloody mindedness and perseverance of learning that swim, you know, of moving the rods about every day until I got a bite, and then, you know, moving rods around within that spot and fine-tuning it to, you know, so that I had banker spots. Have you ever had that, where you got, like, banker spots only you can sort of catch from?
Yeah, in fact, the Sunken Island on pit two.
Yeah.
Did quite well from that swim, but I wasn't fishing the obvious spot. I got one spot going, it was deeper than what a lot of people fished around there. It was about 16 to 18 foot.
And, yeah.
It's all a relative term for pit two, because it was a low stog, but...
I remember...
People follow me in there.
Do you remember Martin Pick on Elstow 1, when we first started fishing? He kept going in the... what was it called? the pump, yeah, every week, and he had a 30 out of there literally every week. Even when the fish weren't there, he was catching out of it, and he just kept going in that swim every week because he knew it was worth a 30 basically every week, and he pretty much did. And I fished that swim a few times, never had a bite.
Yeah, I think there's obvious spots, and getting back to this week in the swamp, I fished with two bottom bait rods on, well, pretty much obvious spots, and probably too obvious. You know, the Don's obviously got something rocking in there, and I'm going to have to spy on him.
Yeah. I'm going to have to pause this again. One sec, sorry. Hopefully we won't get any more interruptions. The reason for these interruptions, many apologies, but my phone is ringing like 20,000 times a day, and not even sure I'm exaggerating. The Northern Angling Show is this coming weekend, so that's like 4 or 5 days' time, something like that. 4 days from now, which means I am actually on site from tomorrow, and there is lots of stuff to sort out. It's double the size this year. We've gone from 7,000 square metres to 14,000 square metres, and it is actually double the work, double the punishes, double the stands, double pretty much everything. So yeah, we are, but we're there, and it's going to be absolutely obscene. It's going to be a fantastic show. One of something that's topical actually at the minute, Mark, we're going to discuss a masturbator. Somebody who's been known for his heavy baiting over the years, has just seen something on the net, haven't you, Mark?
It's on the net, it must be true.
Yeah, well, I sent you that text this morning, and I sent you the two words, pot kettle, and you must have thought I was after meaning something you said, because you was on the phone before the screenshot even came through.
Yeah, so explain the scenario.
Yeah, well, you know, said angler, right, yeah?
Right, yeah.
Known for... He's known for his heavy baiting and his inconsiderateness of other anglers. He's moaning about someone else heavy baiting and being inconsiderate.
So no more therapy. Right, yeah, they're gone now.
I thought it was quite amusing, so that's why I sent you this shot.
Yeah.
Didn't see it myself, obviously. You've blocked me a long time back. I just seen someone else reposted. I think their comment was, is it National Irony Day today?
Yeah, you sent me the post. Let's read it, because there's a couple of things ongoing here. One, there's the actual morals of you know, heavy baiting lakes that other people are fishing. We have spoke about this before, haven't we? About you know, but like consideration for other anglers, which obviously is it is a key, and lots of people think the key to everything is just to throw a load of bait in a lake, which isn't always the case. But these are two new syndicate members, it appears, on the Woolpack, and right, yeah, man, has basically called out these two new members of a syndicate, and tagged in the owner of the syndicate, Andy, who's a very reasonable fella. And I'm pretty sure Shelley's fishing these places for free, because he does his tuitions and stuff on there, and promotes them. And I don't know, I've got a bit of an issue with him calling out two new members. It might be a bit naive, they might be young, I don't know. His message says, why is it new people fishing a lake filler need to fill it in regardless of anglers still fishing, plus the lake's only done three fish? Maybe you two new members should reread your email sent out by Andy. All you're doing is fucking the lake up for other Woolpack syndicate members and feeding the birds. Ask yourself this, 3 weeks of filling it in for what, apart from feeding the birds? Why don't you wait until it's fishing and have some fucking respect? Which is probably the most ironic bit, because Shell has been banned from a number of lakes for having no respect for other anglers. You know, there were stories of him on Horton. Well, they weren't not stories, they were facts, you know, from people fishing there, where he was going on there floater fishing in the daytimes. People were bivvied up. He was on there at 6 a.m, you know, before first light, and he was actually spotting in other people's swims, filling the lake in with floaters, casting over other people on bite time, you know, like casting up wind for basically the floaters to drift down to where he wanted the fish. That's one example. he got banned off there. He did the same on Willow, where he fed so heavily that the swans were throwing up on the side of the lake, and duly banned him off there, and implemented a ban, a floater, not a floater ban, but the amount, you could only bring one bag of floaters with you, you know, so it implemented a rule change for everybody because of it, his inconsiderateness. I mean, there are millions of stories, we have mentioned Shelley a few times on here, but there are millions of stories, well, factual stories, they're not rumours, they're things that people I know personally or have personally witnessed myself. So it seems a bit ironic that he's calling out somebody else for doing it. I mean, the issue, you know, not everybody's as good an angler as Jim Shelley, so the fact that, you know, the lake isn't fishing that well, and he knows that it actually probably isn't the right time to sling tons and tons of bait in, maybe these lads are just not as good as anglers, him. They don't really know that, you know, it's all a learning curve, but we can all be more considerate, can't we, Mark, to other people, I think.
Oh yeah, certainly, without a doubt. And I'll be honest, I've used a lot of bait in my time, but there's ways of putting it in. I used a lot of bait on the wolf pack, but nobody saw me do it. But even on the old syndicate, which, you know, was a bit cliquey, I think. Excuse me. You know, you're just sneaking around in the early hours of the morning. You're doing it quietly, and then it's your own little secret, clandestine missions. But I also noticed this screenshot. Jim Shelley likes his own post.
Oh dear. Yeah, we'll just leave that one there, shall we? I'm sure Shelley will have something to say about us. He normally does when we call him out for something on there. I mean, I don't disagree with what he's saying. Maybe it is the wrong thing for these lads to be doing at this time of year. But he's been known for not giving a shit about other anglers and doing what he wants to do. And he was known for his heavy baiting. He's made dozens of articles on heavy baiting. He was known for it. And, you know, I'm sure he did that many times to the detriment of other people fishing. So people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, number one. And number two, if you do think it is the wrong thing for this time of year for these lads to be doing, then have a word with them. Don't call them out publicly on Facebook, tagging the lake owner in it. That does seem a little bit, well, it seems like he's trying to cause trouble for the lads. And, you know, maybe have a word with him and help him, explain to him that, yeah, this is probably, you know, maybe it's not right for this time of year. Wait till the fish start feeding so the bait's not rotting on the bottom or the birds just hammering it. But generally, on well-stocked lakes, like, the owners are encouraging you to put as much bait in as possible because it's feeding the fish for him. But anyway, we do know he's a masturbator, so he should share his knowledge with them. Talking of masturbators... that is the name of the carp band, the Northern Carp Group, that are playing at this year's Northern Angling Show. There's a whole list of people playing. Clive Gibbons, probably most well-known drummer in the fishing game, is with myself, Sam Toro. There's Vinny, the two Pauls, Paul Sewell and Paul Wild. Playing a load of rock songs on the Saturday afternoon, evening. We're having a bit of an after show party, sort of 4 p.m. till about 7 or 8 at night. Might go on a bit later if it's busy. We've got a bar in there, the Angler's Rest Bar, and we're going to be playing. And if we do it really bad, then Clive Gibbons' proper band is going to be playing as well. We've got DJ in there, Fraser Todd's going to be playing some pretty cool disco-y house edits. And having a bit of a knees up here with all the anglers, all the companies, and the general public. If you're coming to the Northern Angling Show at Event City in Manchester, if you're coming on the Saturday, then you can just bob yourself into the party. It's all free. It's just going on as part of the show, and then the bar area will be separated from the rest of the show at 5 o'clock. You won't be allowed back into the sort of show area. It'll be the party only. And we will carry on into the evening. Fancy a few beers, Mark? You drinking at the minute, or are you on a health binge?
I'll be driving.
It's the
short and disappointing answer there. And I'm too tight to pay for a Manchester taxi.
Yeah, a taxi probably would be easier than a hotel at the minute, actually, because the hotels. Well, it's the Manchester Marathon on Sunday, and the hotels have been full for over 6 months. I know the Nash lads tried booking a hotel last week. They've ended up in Warrington. But I think we had the last three rooms about 4 months ago. Although we won't have that issue in future, they're building a hotel as we speak on the side of the event centre, and we will have exclusive booking for that from next year onwards. So it's all good. The show in general, there's pretty much everybody there. We've got the main stage. There's a fantastic lineup on the main stage. People like Dave Lane and... I should really get this information up in front of me, shouldn't I? But there's a new area this year. We've got all the big names. We've got Ali and Dean on there. I think Mark Pitchers and Harry Charrington are doing a bit about their sort of series of videos that they do. There's a load of big match names and stuff on there as well. And Des Taylor, Alan Blair, Danny Fairbrass is there this year's show. I spoke to Danny, actually, we'll play that out in a minute. I spoke to Danny earlier just to ask him about the show. We ended up in a bit of a discussion about Ziggs, because Danny was out fishing when I called him. But we've introduced another stage this year as well, which is hosted by Joe Turnbull, who we had on a previous Carpcast. He's a rig expert, a bait expert. I'm sure he is a rig expert as well. But he's hosting the new stage area called The Lab, which is an interactive area where you can basically learn about stuff. So everybody that's on in The Lab, now there is a few big names on there. Daryl Peck's on in there, showing you how to tie all the rigs from Corda Masterclass 4. But everybody who's on in there is doing something that you can learn from, as opposed to just doing a slideshow about whatever. We've got Dave Levy in there as well, but we've got like a top pike angler, one of Ireland's top pike anglers. We've got a catfish expert in there. We've got Dr. Paul Garner doing his underwater and lore stuff. But it's basically a small little area, pretty cool. There's a screen in there and like a fish tank in the front where people will be demoing bait and rigs and stuff. And I know Joe Turnbull's going to demonstrate how to make your own goo. I've got no idea how goo is made, but basically...
He could get arrested for that. But, yeah, in public, how there's no children watching.
You can do it yourself, apparently. You can self-make goo. So, he's going to teach us that. I'm quite interested to have a little look at that one myself. I would like to know.
You want to watch Joe Turnbull make goo?
Stop trying to be smutty, Mark. Come on, let's keep this going. But yeah, The Lab is open both days, on Saturday and Sunday. It's the 1st and 2nd of April. It's at Event City in Manchester. You can buy your tickets on the door. You can have you can buy them pre-sale. There might be still a few little VIP packs left, which are like basically discounted equipment and a free ticket for like £40, I think the packs are. But yeah, Northern Angler Show is happening next weekend. The weather's getting good for fishing now, but all the bargains are there. You can have a chance to have a look at all the new products from all the companies. I think there's 170 different brands there this year. So have a weekend off fishing and it will set yourself up for the year. You're going to learn something that's going to last you the rest of the year. And maybe pick up a few new bits and stock up on stuff. See what's out there to help you with the year's fishing. So, I'm after a few bits this year, Mark. Have you got your eyes on anything? You having a look at any new products or stuff that you want?
Dunno. A deeper there.
With
a sonar-y thing.
Yeah, I think they've... who owns Deeper now? What company? The company that own Deeper are there. And I think they've got a little bit on... It might be on the Eric stand, actually. I'm not 100% sure. But I am... potentially looking to purchase a Deeper this year. The cheating technology. In fact, I saw something. Yeah. I saw something on the net regarding technology. Oh, that's right, Carpology.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Carpology posted an article. They do some great internet content, don't they, Carpology? They do some, it's a little bit clickbaity, but usually with some information behind it. We've said before, Carpology have some of the best digital content online. I always end up reading their bits, you know, it's always interesting. But I think they pose the question, is technology okay in fishing, basically? And it's the conversation we've had on here a lot. And they got a couple of people commenting. They had Steve Briggs commenting. He's obviously, he's basically saying, yes, you know, it's all game. He uses GPS, echo sounders and stuff a lot. Fishing abroad, it's kind of essential. He's always used it, and he's no problem. I know Steve uses a bait boat, and you know, he's all game for it. I got stuck in again in the discussions. You know, my view is as we've said a lot of times, it's personal, but you know, it's what fishing means to you, basically. If you just want to go make life as easy as possible and catch a few fish, it ain't a competition. It's entirely up to you. You know, for me, like, when technology completely replaces the watercraft, such as the drones, the overhead stuff to find fish, and you know, echo sounders, GPS, I don't know, like, it takes away the physicality. I think I'm up for it with using tools. You know, you still physically got to cast, say, an echo sounder, a smart caster, deeper. You still physically got to cast it out, and you still got to interpret the information coming back off an echo sounder or an app. You know, you've got to interpret that information, and then you've got to use it. You know, why are the fish doing what they do? You haven't got a deeper set out there 24 hours a day telling you that, you know, the water temperature's dropped, the fish have moved into deeper water. Like, you've still got to work some stuff out. For me, like, you know, GPS controlled autopilot bait boats and stuff is a little bit taking the piss, because that's completely taking away the skill element of casting and stuff. So I don't know, it's the age old thing, it's what fishing means to you, it's all out there, you use it or you don't. I think that's the kind of conclusion I've come to.
Agreed.
Yeah, pretty much. Although I'm kind of leaning a bit more towards using it in my angling. I just am waiting for the prices to come down.
Yeah, the deeper thing, especially. I think that's, it seems like a pretty useful, you know, rather than having a million casts with a marker float. You know, scan it with the deeper first, see where the shelf comes up, see anything obvious, you know, see where it drops off, and then maybe have a lead onto, I'd still have a lead onto the spot with, you know, with my lead. I'd still want to feel the bottom to know what's there. But yeah, certainly for depths and stuff. I don't think they find fish. Like, the echo sounders and stuff, they don't really tell you. They'll flash fish up on the thing, but the way they work is, I think they detect like air pockets, like volumes of air, and that could be a million and one things, such from a carrier bag to Lord knows what, you know, to bream to anything. So I don't think it particularly helps you, you know, in actual fish location. I still think you've got to do that yourself. But anyway, moving on, we'll both be coming back with a deeper, I guess. there's a VIPcarpholidays.com is a website, it sells family holidays. There are a few dates cropped up for 2017, the cancellations and stuff, at both the River Lot, which is Jim Lightfoot's villa, sleeps up to 8 people with games room, pool table, table tennis, own private fishing bank, all the equipment in the south of France. It's a fantastic villa. It's got a swimming pool and all sorts. There's a few dates there for this year, and there are also a few dates on the Saint Amand, which is near Limoges, which again is a farmhouse, sleeps up to 10 people. It's got a 4.5 acre lake, heavily stocked with carp. They're both perfect for family holidays. You can even get two families in there. They're both around the £1,000 mark for a week, which is great value for like 8 to 10 people. And if you get yourself either to the Facebook page, VIP Carp Holidays, or get yourself to vipcarpholidays.co.com, and you can check out the dates there. I'm also taking bookings for 2018. If you want prime dates in 2018, such as kids' holidays and stuff, then I suggest you go and check it out now before they are all gone, because they're the ones that go first on these family holidays. If you want to talk to us about VIP Carp Holidays, we do have a stand at the Northern Angling Show next week, so yeah, come and see us. on there. Clearwater Fisheries also are the sponsor, official sponsor of the Carpcast. They've just announced that their Runswater, Kellett's Lake, is opening this 6th of April. It opens, which is the week after the fishing show. There's a load of new fish gone in there. You can have a look on YouTube, see all the stocking videos. The fish that Alex has handpicked are absolutely fantastic. I've been waiting for that lake to open because I quite fancy the look of it. The way they've spaced it out is you only fish from one side. It's anything from sort of 70 to 90 yards to the far margin, and it means basically there's nobody opposite you. It looks really well set out for fishing, depending on which part of the lake in, everybody can reach the far side, and there's loads of spots all over it, and there's loads of fish in there, and it looks extremely comfortable, and the caffy is amazing at Clearwater Fisheries. And again, Clearwater are at the Northern Angling Show. They're sponsoring the bar and catering area. That Alex and all the gang are going to be there all weekend long. And if you want to get your name down for what will be one of the most exclusive syndicates in the north, then I suggest you get yourself along to Northern Angling Show either Saturday or Sunday and come and have a chat with Alex and the gang. So a big thank you to Clearwater for supporting the Carpcast and supporting the Northern Angling Show. And it's a fantastic complex. And we're going to be doing a Carpcast social on there at some point this year. I just need to sort a date with Alex, but once his fishing show's out of the way, then we will be announcing a date. And we're trying to sort a date out as well, back end of the summer, maybe end of August, at another lake up near you, Mark. A lake that I was chatting with Martin about it the other day, who runs a lake close to your heart, Mark.
I come the big bits.
Yes.
Yeah, interesting. Good. You forgot its name then?
Yes. And we're looking to do a very large social on there, where we can maybe get 40 anglers and maybe another 30 or 40 for a slideshow in the evening. We'll be pricing it fairly well, just a little bit more than cost, because we're giving some to charity. We're going to give 25% of everything made there to a charity. So keep your ears open for that. But we are, the lads that have been asking us about doing kind of a budgety, cheapish social for a large number of people. We are working on it. We think we've got a venue now. It's a case of tying down a date, sorting a few things out. And obviously we're going to be doing it for charity, so it's all for a good cause. And we'll hopefully have somebody down there, maybe for cast intuition, not wanting to give too much away who it might be, but who will do a slideshow for us in the evening as well. I'm just working on that, but shout out to Martin who came up to us and offered us a lake. So hopefully we'll have news of that very soon. Moving on, Mark, you seen anything else on the net?
It's on the net. It must be true.
I've seen something that caught my eye. There's Bainton Fisheries. It's one I've fished before. They're otter fencing it. And I just put this in because there is 4.8 kilometres of otter fence going in.
Wow, it's quite a lot.
It's been done by... Been done by Embryo, Danny Fairbrass's project, and being familiar with Bainton, around that lake you've got a small river that runs between a couple of the lakes. You've got London Edinburgh train line that runs past the fishery. You've got a main road on one side, and I just want to make the point that if Bainton can do it, there's no excuse for any lake not to do it.
No, after speaking with Danny on the show a few weeks ago, Danny's going to be coming back soon as well, actually. We've got him on this show. In fact, we'll get him on after this. But his motives and the way he wants to help angling, you can't question him. There's a lot of people had their minds changed about Danny, I think, after listening to the interview and seeing how passionate he is about it. And we had the same conversation the other day. He's fishing's been good to him, and he's trying to give back as much. I'm glad we've got an active example of Embryo here, a place that Bainton, and as you said, anyone can do it. Get in touch with Embryo. There's a few people out there now. There is help from the Anglian Trust as well. They do have a budget to help people. Rob Hughes has spoke about that. We need to get Rob on fairly soon. Actually, we haven't spoken to him for a little while, have we? But I think no, I'm sure it was like 400 grand or 480 grand or something's been put aside to help, you know, in the protection of the fish from otters and stuff. So, yeah, in fact, we may as well, now we're talking about it, we may as well just get Danny on right now. So welcome back again to Mr. Danny Fairbrass. How are we, pal?
I'm good, thanks, mate. Very good.
Cold and wet. I know you've been fishing this week.
Yeah, it's not gorgeous, is it, at the moment? That lovely weather we had last week, you know, I think turned everybody's heads, and I think woke a few carp up as well. But you know, we're back to bleakness at the moment. It doesn't feel like spring, but you know, it's getting warmer every week. I'm sure the water, so I think they'll be woke up soon.
Have you had the zigs out?
No, mate, I'm worst zig angler on earth. I come from a different generation. I don't know if you're the same, but yeah. I just want to catch them on food. I just don't feel like I'm catching them on a bit of black foam.
I'll tell you a quick story if you've got a minute. You know, you're aware of Roger Bacon. I know you've met Roger.
I am.
Roger's the same as us. We had the conversation yesterday. We'd rather catch him on food. Just something. He hit the nail on the head yesterday. So it's a generational thing. Like it's.
Yes, it is.
Anyway, the week before last, he was fishing. A couple of his mates were on the lake next door. He was fishing on the bottom for 2 days, nothing. They ended up having 10 on zigs next door to him, two lads. He put zigs on, caught, had 5 bites over his last 24 hours. Went back this week. This is a lake that holds about 15 known fish, and there's some that are bred in there, which there's apparently quite a lot, because he's had 10 of them this week on zigs.
Wow.
Again, somebody that doesn't like zigs, still rather catch him off the bottom, but he's had one of the 18, one of the big ones, and it was off his only rod on the bottom.
tell me, how far up in the water column is he fishing, and what's he got on the end bait wise?
He's using black foam, but he's what we call charging it. There's a Nashua Tangleberry liquid. It's a very thick, sticky, sweet liquid, he basically holds it in that with a pair of forceps and like squeezes it like a sponge, so it sucks it all up. And he's noticed that he's had bites pretty quick after refreshing them. It's not very deep, the lake. It's sort of like 5 to 8 foot. In most places, what he's found is he's catching the smaller ones lower to the bottom. There's certain spots. What he said was, the higher he is in the water, he needs to be on weed, like over weed, and the lower he is to the bottom, he's on the cleaner spots. Is something that he's noticed. He's had at least 10 fish. I'm just about to call him now, and because he's coming home today. That this is since yesterday, so he's had one more night. So I don't know what's happened, but same thing. He's only had the one off the bottom, and it's the big one, and all the rest of these ones that are bred in the lake, that sort of mid 20 commons. I found that in the past with zigs. There's certain lakes where the occasional big one comes. On a zig, but generally it's the smaller ones. I know the Essex Manor used to be like that. Everybody says you want to catch the big ones, the 40s, you forget the zigs, but they get hammered, you know, up to low 30s. Yeah. Seems to come in the zigs, but I don't know.
Yeah, where I am is very low stock. So to have, there's no way, although I've used zigs a fair bit in the past when I've been competing in the British Champs and stuff and caught loads and loads on them, you know, I know how to do it.
Yeah.
But when you're on somewhere, a big lake with a very low stock that you've been successful on before, you know, with a tactic, I find it very hard. I couldn't go on something like zigs here because there's no way I'm going to hone my skills on 90 acres with 40 fish in it, you know, with zigs. I'll just be 10 minutes after they're out there, I'll just be thinking, they ain't going, and I'll be winding them in again. You've got to, you know, if I wanted to do it, I'd go somewhere prolific, like linear or somewhere like that, properly hone my skills, because there is a very fine line, I think, with any type of carp angling between getting it right and getting it wrong. you know, and it can be how you're tying the hook on and how the hook sits in relation to the zig bait and the depth you're at and exactly the size of foam you're using and so on and so on, you know. And if you get all of those things right and you catch a load of fish on it, you go on to another lake that might be harder, or I do, with complete confidence in the approach, and then you don't make the same mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I would, I wouldn't rule it out that one day I will hone my skills, but you know, I'm fishing for big fish. If I lose a 40 pounder because it takes me through the weed and a 9 pound hooklink snaps, then I will not be the best person in the world to be around for the next week or so. So, you know, I'd rather get less bites than land them at the moment.
It's my exact thoughts. The thing is with fishing on the bottom, like, for me, lakes are a puzzle. You're trying to unlock the secrets, work it out, especially the low stock fishing. You know, you're trying to learn the habits, the patrol routes, get them feeding, trip them up. And for me, the zig seems to take away all that. You just basically, you've not learned nothing about the lake. I would, you know, all right, you might catch all the big ones in the first week, but do you feel like you've like achieved the
This is me and you being old and set in our ways, you
probably.
Know. I remember Lockie said years ago, why catch them tomorrow when you can catch them today? That was his motto. And fair play to him, he's one of the best, you know, that I've ever fished with. Natural angler, and catching them, still catching them. So I think that's our, we perhaps both need to take the blinkers off a bit and, you know, increase our armoury. But for now, I'm going to carry on doing it the way I'm doing it.
Yeah, there is a line, though. It's just where that line is. I mean, you know, casting bare trebles out and dragging it across a bay on a hot summer's day is...
Kids nowadays, you know, when we do Carp Academy, kids nowadays, they have grown up with zigs. It's their first line of attack.
Yeah.
You know, and they're good at it, and they catch loads of fish as a result. And I think, well, that skill, that element is missing from my fishing, and there will definitely be times where I'm sitting behind motionless rods where I could be making it happen. You know, I think that, you know, the more versatile you can be as an angler, and the faster you can adapt. Like a Darryl Peck, he's good at everything.
Yeah.
He can zig fish, he can margin fish, he can extreme range fish, he can boilie fish, he can particle fish, he can float fish, he can do it all, you know, and he readily does it all. And that's one of the things I think that makes him stand out amongst even the top superb anglers. He stands out again because he adapts whatever tactic is needed to be adapted at the time, you know, and all credit to him for that, you know. I wish I was more like it.
Well, Darryl is doing a talk in our lab section at the Northern Angling Show, which is about 10 days away now, something like that. And you're up here for the first time. We've managed to tie you down. You've not been on holiday or committed elsewhere. I know you've wanted to come in the past, but you know, it's always been a bad date for you. But we've got you this time. So you're on stage both days. I'm sure the Northern... I think one thing that will surprise you is the vibe of the Northern Angling Show. It's not like they've had 20 shows, or 20 years of shows, you know, and people are kind of bored of them. It's all still very new. And what can we expect?
Well, from me, the usual, really. I mean, I love doing shows. I always have. I just love people, you know. It's such a diverse group of people that go carp fishing. There's so many characters out there. You know, I've learned so much myself over the years from people giving little tips away, you know, just paying punters that they're walking around the show and they give you a little gem and you think, that is a bloody good idea, that I'm going to use that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I try to give away as much fish catching information as I possibly can over the course of the weekend. And I know it's been a good show when I feel like I've been run over on Sunday afternoon and like a shadow of my former self turns back up at home Sunday evening, you know, because you've been run ragged. And I love it like that, you know, and hopefully people will feel, you know, there's no barrier to coming up and saying hello. And if they've got a question about something, I'll do my best to answer it. Obviously, all the guys will be there. You know, we basically, what we do is now is say we've got a demonstration kit on the call to stand, the guy who's demoing that rig is the guy that uses it in his fishing all the time.
Yeah.
So if you want to ask about a choddy, for example, it'd be Elliot who'll be talking about the choddies. You know, if you've never used one before, you know, you can stand in front of Elliot, he'll tie it from start to finish. You know, he can provide you with a pack that's got all the bits in it to do it for the first time if you've never done it. And you can hopefully go away armed with something that you didn't have before you went into the show and catch yourself a carp on it the next time you go fishing, you know, because you understand more, you know how to do it properly. Like I said earlier, this fine line between getting it right and getting it wrong, you know, a choddy with a not buoyant enough hook bait that hangs over on its side probably isn't going to catch you a lot. If you're fishing for small fish and you've got a great big hook and a great big pop-up, again, you're probably not going to catch a lot. So we can all iron those things out for people over the course of the weekend. You know, and that the best bits for me is when someone comes up and says, "Oh, that thing you showed me last year, or that thing I read in an article, I've caught this on it and caught that on it," and they get their phone out and they flick through all their pictures. I love all that. You know, that makes me want to go fishing. You know, and it keeps pushing me on to keep sharing that information more and more because it's such a buzz. So you know, I've been up to a lot of the northern shops with our salesmen and gone round. You know, love the northern culture. And the guys generally love the sense of humour, the piss taking, all that sort of thing. You know, they always make you feel very welcome from the word go. So I'm really, really looking forward to it.
And we're probably not going to see Danny Fairbrass on Ziggs anytime
no,
soon.
No, we're absolutely not going to see Danny Fairbrass on Ziggs. No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, like I say, it's my aim always to try and give away as much information as I possibly can. You know, I get a real buzz out of doing that. You know, if people have got any tip-offs of venues up in the north, you know, for embryo places that have fallen into rack and ruin, you know, been dropped by a club or whatever, you know, or have never been fisheries and they know about this little place or big place that really should be a fishery, then come up and see me as well, because most of our lakes that the embryo take on, they come through tip-offs from local people, you know. So if you've got somewhere you think, oh, I wish that was back to its former glory, or I wish that was a fishery, you know about it, we don't, please come up and ask me.
Fantastic. I'm sure there'll be a queue of people all down the corner stand. You're on stage both days as well, and we're really, yeah, really looking forward to having you up here.
Yeah, really looking forward to going, mate.
Cool. Well, I'll see you next week, and we'll hopefully get a beer at some point over the weekend.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Good to speak to you again, mate.
So a big thank you to Danny. Danny will be on the show for a big long interview again, because there was loads of stuff we didn't get to talk about the first time. But yeah, views on Ziggs are interesting. It's basically old people like us don't like using Ziggs, and younger people, it's their first choice method. Does that sum it up?
It doesn't. It doesn't. Yeah, I don't think it's a bit broader than that, but. You know, I've got to class myself as agreeing with Danny. I'd much rather, you know, find the spots or spots, you know, get the bait down there, get the fish, learn the habits, and trap them. You know, catch them that way, kind of earn it. But having a blank save this week by casting a piece of flip-flop out 12 foot off the deck, I see the other side as well. But there's one thing I will say, where I'm fishing, it's got a rule. Out of your three rods you can fish with, you're only allowed one on a zig.
Yeah, I kind of like that.
It doesn't want everyone just fishing zigs everywhere, pieces of foam. He still wants the bait to be going in, and I can do nothing but agree with that.
Yeah, I saw Daryl Peck post something recently as well, saying the same thing about zigs, that he you know, the dreaded zig, like he would rather catch him off the bottom. I think, again, this is... I think it's personal again. Like, so to give an example, when we fished Pit 2, like, we fished that for a few years. By the end of it, pretty much knew the lake, knew the conditions, knew the areas the fish like to go in certain conditions, you know, knew, you know, what fish resided where, you know, there was a couple of swims you were going to catch the twin from. You know, the mother liked coming out of deep water on big winds. And, like, I spoke to two or three, after I fished that, I spoke to two or three people who were fishing, you know, afterwards for those fish, and helped them along with their catch. Obviously, they still had to go and do it themselves, but, you know, you know the sort of thing when you're hunting low stock fish, you're sharing information, you're speaking with people. And how many times did we predict to the day when that fish would come out? You know, we'd wake up and we'd go, oh, it's mother weather today, you know, and somebody would catch it that day. Because you kind of learn it. Now, if when you're zig fishing, and it's very opportunist, you're learning nothing about the lake. Now, does that matter? Maybe not to some people. To me, the hunting side of it is what I want to do. I want to learn the lake. I want to work it out. I want to make a plan, and I want the plan to come together and eventually catch the fish. And for me, that's the satisfaction. But that's for me. That's the way I like doing it. Like, if you just, you know, you get your zigs out, or lures, as I've seen a few people, including Daryl Peck, call them this week. They're basically saying it's lure fishing for carp. And I kind of see that. Now, the end result is, if somebody just wants to be holding that fish up in front of the camera and they want to catch it as quick as possible, and they're not particularly, you know, the enjoyment for them is catching the fish as opposed to the journey, the hunting of it, you know, working the lake out. And most of the lakes I've done well on, especially the low stock lakes, by the time I've caught the fish, I could tell somebody else how to fish that lake. I'd kind of, you know, worked a number of things out. The patrol routes are here. They like doing this on these conditions. On those conditions, they do that. This time of year, they turn up here. Like, they're creatures of habit, you know, because of usually conditions. So, but some people, maybe their enjoyment is not that. Maybe their enjoyment is, you know, the other stuff, you know, that happens on the session, from the socializing to whatever, and they just want to catch the fish any old hour, and they'd be happy sitting there with three zigs out, and, you know, knowing that at some point the fish are going to come across it, get curious, and they're going to snaffle it, whether they're feeding or not. But you're not going to learn bite times doing that. You know, it's just the time that fish happened to swim past the zig, which is why I've seen them called lure fishing quite a bit recently by some prominent anglers, you know, including Daryl. So, I mean, again, it's personal. I'm not judging anybody. You catch the fish anyway that makes you happy. But my personal enjoyment is working the lake out. And I think Dan is the same. Yeah. You know, he made that fairly clear. But again, horses for courses, we are not judging. Not passing.
That's pretty much what it is, I thought. Did the fish actually eat the foam, or are they just swimming along and you foul hook them in the mouth?
I think, again, let's not cast aspersions. So it's not a massively long one, this. It's going to be quite long with Danny, and we do have an interview. But we've got a load of listeners' questions backing up. They're in our forum, which is where you need to ask the listeners' questions, which is in the extra section on the Carpcast website. We've got Ian Walker's been asking about bite indication and hooking mechanics with helicopter rigs. We've got Zoot Lynch asking about ultra hard waters. Another chap asking about a discount code for pinpoint hooks. I don't think that still works. Pinpoint hooks advertised nearly a year ago, but they are at the Northern Angling Show, and they will be doing some special prices at the show. So come and say hello to Mark at the Northern Angling Show. But yeah, we'll go through all these questions on the next show, Mark. We haven't done a listener's question. If you do want to ask us some questions for us to answer, then maybe is now a good time to get them in. We'll clear the backlog of listeners' questions next week, I think, Mark. Get yourself, if you're an extra member, get yourself over, have a look in the forum. There's a listener's question section in the forum. Just bang your question in there. Oh, there's another one as well. A. Kitson, yeah, asking about watercolour. So, we'll get your questions in there, and we'll sort them out next time. I believe you've had a chat with somebody this week, Mark.
Yeah, well, last week I was sat in a bivvy with my old pal Ed Betteridge, so out come the computer and the microphone, and we waffled on. Well, we waffled on for about 5 minutes, and then his sounder box, which was on top of the bivvy, started bleeping away, so you have to listen to the interview to find out what happened. But yeah, we had a good old chat, as well, pretty much like what podcast chats are. It's like two old friends talking fishing. So here he is.
We'll get Adam and come and see us at the Northern Anglia show. Mark and I will both be there on the Carpcast stand. So yeah, come and see us. And here's Ed.
Once again, I'm going to welcome your mate Ed Betteridge back to the Carpcast, and I've got you on here, Ed, because I've got a bone to pick with you.
Right, what's that then?
Well, Jamie and myself are recording. We're talking a while back, about December, I believe this was. We're talking how crap everywhere is fishing. And I'm going text messages saying to you, "Oh, I've got six now." He ended up with 12, making us both out to be complete liars.
Yeah, it was just one of them weird sessions, and it was actually, well, we're down at Monks now, and it was actually the swim opposite that I was fishing. And yeah, it was unbelievable, really. You know, the fish were showing like it was April. There was fish all over, and it was happening. And you know, and I managed 12 fish. It was one of them unbelievable winter sessions that you know, I've probably never had before, and might not have again since.
Oh, you've got a milky. We were bemoaning the lack of action everywhere, and you know, the exception always proves the rule.
Yeah, that was back in December, and December's probably one of my worst months on the bank. You know, I've fished hard throughout the year, throughout the autumn, and fished into November usually. In December, I normally take my foot off the gas and catch up with family things and don't fish as much as I have done and just chill out when I am fishing. But yeah, that session, I was absolutely knackered by the time I'd done it. Because all the action was literally between dawn and about 12 o'clock in the morning. So it was 4 hours of just frantic catching.
Yeah, it's quite sociable. At least they're not night captures.
Yeah. You got a decent amount of kip, and then it all just kicked off in the morning. You know, yeah. I got there the sort of the evening before and saw a few fish showing. Dropped on them, got the rods out, got a bit of bait out because you know, they were actually feeding on proper amounts of bait as well. And I could just see the silhouettes in the night showing 70, 80 yards out, something like that. And I was really confident to buy it. Then I woke up at dawn with absolutely nothing, and thinking, what have I done wrong here? Have I gone out too far? Whatever else. And I was thinking about dropping a rod back, because I was fishing about 80 yards, thinking about dropping a rod back for about 60. And just umming around about that when one ripped off, landed that one, another ripped off, and landed that one. And yeah, it just went mad from there, really.
Oh, sounds great. Was it miles? Was there anything you think that triggered him to go mad like that?
It wasn't particularly mild. I don't think there was a frost, but I'm guessing it was sort of 1-2 degrees at night. In the daytime, it was 5-6 degrees. I think we'd had a mild spell just before then, 2 or 3 days before then, it sort of touched 10 degrees. And whether that was the trigger or the catalyst, I don't know. I'm not entirely sure. But whatever it was, they just kicked into life. And yeah, it was a great winter session.
Oh, you're not kidding. Did it just happen for you, or was there other fish coming out around the lake, or did you just... right place, right time?
The guy in this swim, he had one, and yeah, he had to sit there and watch me catch fish after fish, which, you know, I've been in the same boat several times before. Yeah, I was the guy in the far bank slamming. But no, it just seemed to be that concentrated area, and I was fishing two spots, two rods on one spot straight in front of the swim, and the swim next to me was free, and I had a rod on that spot as well, and both rods were going. I had a zig off to the left, because in winter you can use four rods, and I had bites on all of them. I think I had three bites on the zig, and the rest was all off the deck. And ended up losing a few fish as well. You know, I think I had 15 bites all in all. Which was
that is madness.
Yeah, nice little session, and 330s to 34, and the 34 was a cracking fish, nice linear, all in its winter colours. So yeah, happy with that, mate. Very happy.
Nice. Now, maybe not on the podcast, but you're going to have to show me exactly where these spots are now. I've just got a ticket on here.
Yeah, not a problem at all.
And it's out of swim, every swim. I'm going to pick your brain.
Oh. Bye. I've got to go.
Oh. Right. I've picked the Mac up, I've got the mic, and I'm going to chase Ed down the bank. Oh, there's his receiver on my bivvy, still beeping away. Let's go. He's dropped his sweeteners. Oh, I'm not running, I'm walking. Too old for running. Yeah, certainly good timing. 4 minutes into the podcast, and it's got to take He's not far away, to be honest. I'm just walking into his swim now. He has his rods bent, he's in. Ed, your app's come off. Oh, your fish has come off.
There's a pike in the margins, but straight through the lock.
Oh, pike in the margins, oh no.
It all round.
Oh, yeah, dear.
And then it twisted itself and got away. So not quite
a golf. Oh, nearly, right. I'm going to pause this, and then we'll... Well, that was a bit of fun and games, but it's not the conclusion we wanted, Ed. Do you want to tell us what just happened?
Yeah, well, obviously the receiver went off, and I'm in the swim next door, and got a bit of a workout, legging it down to the swim. And the bobbin was doing a bit of a strange dance. So I picked up the rod, and this pike hit the surface about 5 yards out that was obviously going up and down the margin, fry bashing, and it managed to pick up the fluorocarbon and got twisted right up in it. So no carp, unfortunately, just a pike.
Oh dear, you didn't get him out?
No, it slid down the line a little bit. I thought I was going to net it at one point. Then it just shook its head and it got through.
Yeah, it's that time of year. What's the date today? It's the 15th of March.
Yeah,
something like that. About that time when the pike are busy in the margins, spawning, they're the first fish to spawn.
Yeah, that's it.
Which is, evolution's got it right, because there's your little pike fryer hatching. They've grown to an inch, 2 inch, whatever they do. Only the little eggs are hatching and then they're straight in there eating them.
Yeah, this is it. This is it.
And it's a pretty quick early spawners as well.
Yeah, it's the predators. It's the same with the bird life as well. The grebes tend to have a brood a little bit earlier than most birds, just so they can capitalise on the fry. For catching the small fry for their offspring. So yeah, it's a sensible way of doing things, I suppose. Mother Nature knows.
Yeah, Mother Nature does know. So. Where were we anyway? We were talking about... we just got totally distracted.
You were trying to find out my spots on here, that's what you
said. Yeah, damn right. I'm going to be shining a torch in your face later on. So, let's just set the scene for... we mentioned we're on Monk's Pit, which is just at the side of the A14 out on Huntingdon Way. It's, what do you say, about 15 acres?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah, it looks about that.
It's a syndicate with a waiting list, but it has a phenomenal stock of fish.
Yeah, there's a lot in here. I mean, I don't know. I don't think anybody really knows quite how many fish in here, but there's several hundred. And I fished it a little bit in the summer. I kind of got it as a backup water from my North Ants water, and I really wanted to have a go in winter because, it's got awesome winter fall. So I fished it a few times throughout the warmer months when the target fish came out of the North Ants water. To be honest, I didn't blank. It's one of them waters you can come to and catch multiple captures. I think the worst session I had was two fish and lost one, and the best one was, I think I had 15 takes in the summer up in the corner swim called the chat room, and the fish got in the reeds. And for a bit of sport, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I think even I'm going to catch a few this summer. If there's that many fish in it, they're that daft.
You should do, and there's good out of 30s as well. I think most sessions out of 30. I won't say every session out of 30, but... sort of most sessions had a 30, and the first plank, sorry, the first blank actually had was in December. So, it's certainly a water you can come to and catch at the right time of year.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to going on. But just going back to your winter session that we were talking about, you mentioned that they were eating proper amounts of bait.
Yeah.
For December, how much would a proper amount of bait be? Was it boilies?
Yeah, I tend to fish a bit of a spod mix in winter. I don't go all in on boilie because I don't want to stodge the fish up. I want to sort of keep them feeding, fish something that's highly digestible, and just keep them troughing around. So I had a certain degree of maggots. I think I took a gallon of maggots with me. I think I had a couple of K of hemp. That's wet hemp. Dry hemp. So it made probably 4 kilo of wet hemp. A couple of kilo of corn and a few hole and crush boilers. And boilies is important to me in that sort of mix. One, to get the fish picking bigger items up, which essentially is my hook bait. And two, the bait itself has to be highly digestible. So I wouldn't really use a fish meal in the colder months. I know a lot of people do and they do okay on it, but I don't like it. And certainly if you put in bait in there as well, if you're fishing single up baits or just a stringer or something like that, I think you can get away with it. But if you put in any sort of amount of bait in, you want something that's easily digestible. So something that's based on a nut meal or a bird food meal that just goes through them and doesn't stodge them up. So, yeah, I'm guessing I got through a good few kilos. And I know after the first day of activity, I had to go back to the car and raided for tins of sweet corn and, you know, cans of hemp and anything I had lying around in there, just to bulk it out so I had enough for the following day.
Yeah, we'll keep, I've got a little box in the back of the van. There's a few emergency gas bottles, emergency tins of corn, spare pants for other emergencies that we'll not go into.
Yeah, I've got the same in the footwells and underneath where the spy tire should be. I've just got loads of bits and pieces stashed away, you know, spare bait. Because I'm terrible. I'm not the best organised angler in the world. You know, if something comes out of my bag, the chances are I forgot about it and it don't go back in. So I have to have a spare of anything that's essential sat in the car waiting. It's just me. It's just, you know, how I've learned to be over the years. So, yeah, having a spare in the car can be a lifesaver at times.
Yeah. Your organisation is brilliant. I remember back when we were both doing the coaching course, the Angling Trust Level 2 course.
Right.
We were doing the you know, little rig demos and whatnot, and you brought your tackle box out. It looked like a spider on acid doing spinning his web in there.
Yeah, I don't really like throwing anything away, and I tend to just keep rigs for the sake of keeping rigs, and I don't know why. And they all just end up in a big ball in my rig bin until I get to a point where I just think, right, and just been everything that's never going to get cast out again. But yeah, I'm a terrible hoarder, and then rather than throw a rig away, I'll just put it back in the bin.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same, although every couple of weeks I will go through each rig, I will dissect it, and anything useful is removed.
Yeah, taking off all the little rings and all the bits and pieces. Yeah, yeah, I'm safe.
Yeah, I've been using the multi-rig for quite a while now, and the only thing you can really recycle on them is one little tiny rig ring. But still, you still, you know, do it. The hook's useless.
Yeah.
You know, your hooklings generally kinked and knackered by that point.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm quite tight. You know, I know Corda sort me out with all my gear, but I just don't like to see any sort of wastage. So, like I say, you just recycle any of the bits and pieces you can.
Yeah, I'm being a Northern, I'm a bit tight. With the amount of fish in this lake, fishing here, do you think three bait stringers instead of two will be the one?
I'd go with a little bit more bait if I were you, Mark. I've had a few scenarios in here where the bait's run out and the bites have dried up, even though the fish have been in the area. I'm not saying I haven't caught on single up baits, because I have, you know, just casting and showing fish here and there, you know, especially at this time of year. It's quite early on, and they're not really having loads and loads of bait, although the fish I have had this session has been over bait, but I wouldn't just come and pile it in. But in summer, you get to certain scenarios where you just can't give it enough. When they're up for it in the warmer months, they will just chomp through kilos and kilos, and when the bite stops, it means they've cleared you out and you've just got a single up bait sitting there. So just in case, redo the rods, get some bait in there, and you're away again.
And start again.
Yeah, and it, you know, don't be afraid of recasting and spotting, because it doesn't seem to bother them. When they're hungry, you know, the spot will not bother them at all. And if anything, the attraction of you know, your bait and the flavourings going through the water brings them to the spot. And I've had fish straight after spotting on here. You know, when they're hungry, they'll have it.
Hey, back in five, I'm just going to put some spots out. No, that reminds me of when you see people fishing like your St John's and Brasenose, your day ticket waters, that sort of thing. You know, when I spoke to Kev Hewitt on the podcast, you know, he's England international, he's made me feel tired when he described his fishing. It's hard work, but those who work at it, you know, they get that rhythm going, they catch the bait, everything's on point. They catch a lot of fish, it's good to watch.
It takes a lot to do, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, you're absolutely drained, you've had an hour's sleep. You know, you've just had a double or a 20, then to get the rods out, smack on the money again, start spotting up and, you know, working hard for it. You know, I take my hands off people like that, because me and you come from a big fish background, you know, and you look back at Elstow too, and, you know, places like that, and, you know, 2, 3, 4 fish a year is a result on places like that. Yeah, these guys are getting that in an hour, and it's just a whole different mentality. And, you know, going back to having... So that session where I had 12 fish, you know, I didn't get a cup of tea until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I was
what? You didn't make time for a brew?
Every time, I thought, right, get the rods back out, let's get spotted up, let's do it. And I had the kettle on 3 times, and just before the steam started rising, the rod was away again, and it was just like, geez. And, you know, I was doing a bit of work as well, because Chubb had brought out some new hooking mats and carp care kit. So I was trying to get those photos done as well at the same time as photoing the trophy shots and everything else. And it's not easy on your own when you've got to... do your trophy shots on self-takes. I had a secondary camera just to ping a few auxiliary shots off as well, and, you know, not have the fish out of the water for any long, you know, any more length of time than you would do anyway. So it was a case of set the scene, almost robotic, get your one camera up on your tripod, ready to take your, you know, your normal trophy shots, and have a separate camera get all the light settings and everything ready. So it was a case of fish out on the mat, ping, 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 with one camera, lift it up and go away and, you know, ping away the trophy shots, then slip the fish back again. And hopefully get a couple more shots as it drifts back into the water.
And then catch another one because another rod's off.
Yeah, that's it. And I had a couple of double takes on the, you know, in that session. It was, you know, I had a zig absolutely ripping line off me, and I was playing this other fish, and, you know, I was debating what to do, and I was thinking, this fish doesn't feel that big. Should I put it down and tackle the zig rod? And I thought, no, get the fish that you're in charge of. And that turned out to be a 34, so I'm I'm pretty glad I didn't put that rod down.
Yeah, was that the biggest of the session, a 34?
Yeah, I had a 34 and a half, a 33-12, another 30, and quite a few 20s.
That is a mad match. I'd be happy with that session in summer.
Yeah, to be honest, it's probably one of my best sessions on here. I know I had another 15 bite hit on here, but I was fishing down in the bottom corner in the reeds, and a lot of them were small fish. So, you know, as sessions go, that one session in December was, you know, probably the best session of the year, really. Well, apart from catching the big one, because that's essentially what we're here for, to catch that one big one.
Yeah, we'll get to the big one in a bit, but we had this chat yesterday. I think I'm going to go through it again. Why this lake fishes well in the winter, when the rest of the country generally wasn't. And we were going through a few other waters that are fished well in. There's Majestic Pool up near Yorkshire, that fish, that's winter form, it always fishes well.
Right.
But we mentioned Farlows. Mm. That's had winter form for what this place in Farlows have got in common. We're right at the side of the A14 and Farlows is at the side of the M25. You mentioned that the noise and the constant rumbling and vibrations might...
I mean, I've sat here and sort of racked my brains and thought, why does this water fish so well? And, you know, in the winter, it shouldn't do. You know, it's deep, it's weedy, and it's just not your sort of archetypal winter water. I mean, you know, across there, sort of down to our right, it goes down to 22 foot, you know, with the average depth being over 20. You've got a shallow end as well and some shallow points, but... You know, in the middle of summer, you do get a lot of weed in here. So it's not the sort of water that you necessarily think is going to be a good winter water, or, you know, water that's going to fish through, but it does. And, you know, the only thing I can think of that sets us apart from quite a few other waters I know is the road. You know, for anybody that's not fished here or driven past here, you've got the A14, which has risen probably about, would you say, 12, 15 foot above the lake on one bank.
Yeah, maybe a bit more.
Yeah, it could be. And, you know, you've got constant traffic there, day and night, going past, you know. And, you know, one day I was sitting here watching it, and I was thinking, well, the fish would be used to that. And all the birds would be used to that as well. But as soon as you get, blues and twos go past, like a police car and stuff, all the coots scatter into the far corner. So they're obviously not settled by it. You know, there's something about it that upsets them. And that got me thinking, well, could it have an effect on the carp? I mean, in the summer months, you virtually can't see the road because all the leaves are on the trees and it makes it a lot quieter and everything. But in the winter months, once all the leaves fall off, you're constantly seeing lights go backwards and forwards. You know, some of the lorries are lit up like Christmas trees. And, you know, obviously, then you've got the vibration as well. And you know, I'm starting to think that it might have something to do with white fishes all year round. And, you know, you also mentioned Farlows, which is right next to the M25. And again, it's the same sort of scenario. The M25 is risen above the lake, and there's going to be a certain degree of vibration. I know it's got a bit more boarding on the side of the 25, but you know there's still gaps in the boarding where lights is going to be constantly flashing by. So I don't know. I'm thinking there's something in it. I've not got a massive amount of proof to prove anything, but you know it kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah, there's definitely something in there. I mean, obviously a well stocked and good stock helps.
Yeah. But there's a lot of data waters up and down the country that are stocked as well as this, but don't tend to fish as well in winter. So, I don't know.
Now, let's talk about the big and porky.
Yeah, I actually had it from the swim I'm in now.
Oh, you did? What spot?
I'll show you later.
What spot? What rig? What bait?
I red hinged stiff rig. It was a big old... big old whistler kicking in, and it was quite cold but miserable. You know, really good carp fishing conditions.
Yeah.
And I dropped into that swim just on a whim, really. You know, I'd seen a few fish kicking around, seen a few shows, and there was a lot of fish there when I moved in. I'd done the first night and I'd had one fish. I think it was a low 20, which is fairly slow for me on here in the warmer months. And I must admit, I was looking for a move and went to walk around the lake and found quite a lot of fish in the far corner of the fish in the swim called the Swamp. And I stood there and watched them for a bit. And I saw a good number of shoals, but I didn't see anything particularly big. But I was wondering on whether to move or whether not to move. And then I come back around to my swim, climbed a tree, looked down into the reeds, and there was a few fish moving around in the reeds, and then this big old lump just drifted through. I couldn't make out quite how big it was or which fish it was, because there was a bit of a ripple going through and it was quite breezy, but I could see it was a big old fish. And how the reeds were then, it was quite thick and I couldn't get anywhere near it. You know, there was reeds on the left hand side of my swim, and the fish was sort of round back in the back of these bay in the reeds. So I couldn't get a bait anywhere near it, which was, you know, sort of a little bit frustrating, no big fish there. But I reasoned the only thing I could do was to sort of fish where I could fish. If the fish drifted out and fancied a feed, you know, I was there and I had three carefully positioned traps. Sorry, I got a bit of a cold. And I think it was literally on dawn, on my last morning, the rod ripped off. The fish got stuck in the weeds for a good while. Sorry, I got a drink.
Yeah, no worries. That's one thing we do a lot of talking. You need a bit of lubrication.
Yeah, I always seem to pick up the cold this time here as well. So yeah, the bite ripped off, picked up the rod. The fish was just solid in weed. And I was debating what to do. You know, he's got several boats dotted around on here. And I thought about going out in the boat, which is what I'd normally do. But there was a big old wind ripping in. Probably about 15, 20 mile an hour. And because we haven't got any outboard motors or anything like that, it's all power. Not a problem when there's only a light wind, you just sort of pull yourself out to the fish, pop the fish out of the weed in there, and you're away. But the way the wind was pushing, it would have gone straight across the other two lines, which would have caused loads of problems with a hooked fish. And it would probably ended up pushing me into a reed bed, which I didn't really fancy. So I persevered as much as I could from the bank, trying constant pressure, slack lines, everything to try and get this fish moving. And in the end, I sort of popped the boat over, I put the anoki mat, everything in the boat, had my life jacket on, and I just picked up the rod for the last time. I thought, just try it. And it just started moving, this big ball of weed. So I just, give it a bit of grief. And just, to be honest, the rod was bent double. I thought, I'm not taking prisoners. I'm not going to let it weed up again. And, it just come in this one big solid weight. Then under the rod tip, it kicked, got a lot of the weed off its head and just plowed up and down the margins. And I thought, well, I've been playing it quite heavily up until this point, I'm going to carry on doing it. You know, it didn't occur to me that it could be a lump at this point. I just thought, right, I'm getting in the net. So bent it double and gave it the butt, really, and netted it. And, you know, it's the old story. And I didn't really look in the net. I didn't have the head torch on. Just tried to pick the net up.
Oh, this is in the dark.
This is in the dark, yeah. It was just sort of threatening to get light. And it was just like, oh, this is quite heavy. Must be a big ball of weed in there. Grabbed the head torch, flicked in. It's like, oh, right. Big one. So yeah, on the scales it went 49.6, I think it was. So, yeah,
nice.
Quite happy with that.
Nice. Is that a personal best or?
No, Choco's still my personal best. It's 49.12.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Only ounces in it.
I know there's a good chance, especially in early September, that fish would have gone 50. You know, I know he's done sort of 50 odd before on several occasions. And, you know, first of all, I thought, oh, it's not 50, but then I thought, nah, Choco still my PB. I can be happy with that, you know, because Choco was an absolute cracking fish.
Oh, yeah, Choco being the old Stoneacre's monster.
Yeah, and I really did put a time in for that one, whereas the one from here I managed to fluke out in 12 nights. So. But I'll take that. I've done plenty of time on other waters.
Yeah, it comes and goes like that. I mean, I've drafted hard for big fish, and then there's a couple of times I've had my first take has been the big one after not so many nights, so I'll take both.
I mean,
Terrier's just had the parrot after, you know, how long has it been on there? A year and a half, two years?
I guess it's about a year and a half, something like that. Yeah,
he's had a lot of fish on there, a few repeats, and, but he's had the parrot 63.
Yeah, that's a big old fish. Cracking looking fish as well, you know.
Oh yeah, lovely old half. Well, it's like a linear, three quarter linear.
It is, yeah. I'd just like to see that fish, just see how long it is, and see it in the flesh.
I'm greedy. I'd like to catch it.
Well, I'd like to catch it, but I also realise that there's a hell of a waiting list, and you have to sort of join another water in order to stay on that, and realistically, you're chucking £200 and something at a waiting list to stay on there for 10 years, and in which time the fish could be well and truly dead. But you know, credit to anybody that's on there, and of course it is a cracking looking fish. And there's some other nice backle fish in there as well.
Yeah, there's one. Terry had that floppy tail linear. I think that was about mid-40.
Yeah, I know.
Some pictures of him with it.
I think a mate had that at 47. I think he's done.
Yeah.
And there's another common around about the same sort of weight, so it's not a one fish water. There's a few nice ones in there.
Yeah. Do you know, I'd never even heard of that place before the parrot started appearing in the press.
I heard a rumour of it years and years ago. Ooh, single bleep. And it was mine.
Oh, your receiver above our heads.
Yeah, receiver on the roof.
Yes, the bleep from above. That is the carp gods giving us signs.
It would be nice if it ripped off with the carp this time.
It would. It'd be nice if one of my rods ripped off instead of yours. You've only had a couple. You're greedy.
Well, you did have a bite this time yesterday, so there's every chance.
Yeah, I'm happy with the spots that the rods are on. There's a bit of snap out there. Again, not too much. Pretty similar to what you were describing earlier on. It's just kind of digestible pellets, boilies, chop boilies.
Mm.
Well, this is my first time on Monks. It's not really a fishing session. We've been down here working.
Yeah. A lot of people think, you know, we just come fishing and that's it. But, yeah, we've had a good degree of video work to do while we've been down here. And I've been behind the camera, pressing the buttons, and you've been in front, being the star of the show.
Yeah, I won't really say star. You know, where was the makeup team as well? I want to do myself.
Yeah, they took one look at you, mate, and decided they could do a great deal with you.
I don't blame him, to be fair. But yeah, anyone who thinks just talking for 2 minutes about anything is easy, it's a lot easier to watch and or to film than actually do. You know, I take my hat off to actors or anyone who does it for a living.
Yeah, it is, especially about products as well. You know, for the sake of listeners, yeah. We've been down here filming some new reels from Mitchell, some Avocast Blacks, and you know, the nice little reels, but. You know, us as carp anglers, you know, can describe what they do. You know, it's good line lay, and you know, blah blah blah, cast pretty well, smooth drag, and everything else. But you know, when you've got a camera pointing in your face, and you have to talk about the technical details of it, it's not an easy task, as you well know.
No, I mean, how many takes do was there?
Quite a few. Yeah, I've got a lot of editing to do when I get back.
Yeah, I'm glad you're doing the editing, not me.
No, yeah, fair enough.
You're going to be sat at a screen looking at me, hearing my voice for hours on end.
Great. Yeah, but I'm sure I can knock it up and we can create a decent video from it. Yeah,
I'm quite impressed with those little reels as well, to be honest.
Yeah, they look alright. They seem a little part as well, don't they?
Yeah, the black, and we all know how carpy black is.
Oh, they have to be. Yeah. They've got folding reel handles as well, so
yeah, I'm looking at my rods now and you folded my reel handles for your picture and they're still there. I am fishing now with folded reel handles.
Oh, that'll get God. You all confused if it rips off.
I feel dirty. What's happening?
Nah.
Well, let's get back to fishing. You mentioned your North Ants water.
Yeah.
That was going to be your prime target, but, you know, something, was it not quite right, or did you just enjoy it on here?
It's a bit up and down. I mean, I've fished it on and off about the last 3 years now, and my target fish on there is Tyson.
That's a lovely big common.
It is. It's a cracking. It's absolutely stunning common. I mean, it's sort of one of the best in the country, in my opinion. Obviously, it's Burfield common is up there, head and shoulders above anything else. But there's a few other fish, a few other commons that sit nicely in that sort of B category, and that's one of them. It's a cracking fish. It's done 50 pounds a couple of times in the past. You know, and it's one that I really, really want in my album. But unfortunately, it's just not come my way recently. It's just been one of those. I seem to have caught pretty much everything else in there, and most of them several times over. I mean, there's a couple of the other fish sort of in the A-team that I've had three or four times now. And I just seem to suffer recaptures after recaptures. I mean, if I weren't down here now doing this video project, I'd be up on there having another go for it. I was down there last week and I managed to grab a fish out called the baby dog, and that's the third time I've had it sort of this season as such, and you just sort of bang your head against a brick wall after a little while when you're just after that one, and I honestly don't want to catch any of those again. You know, I feel as I'm taking captures off other people that are, you know, fishing for the stock, and it's just been driving me mad a little bit. And you know, every time I'm looking at fish, I'm thinking I've got to be close to Tyson, got to be close to it, and then another fish would pop up, and quite often, as soon as it swirls on the surface, I've got a good idea which fish it is, and if it's not Tyson, it's just like, Right. Another one. So yeah, it's a bit of a frustrating water, but I'm joining again this year for another go, just simply because I'm quite stubborn and I don't want to give up on it. I don't think I'll be doing loads of time on there, but you know, I've learned a lot about the water. And there's certainly some key times, key weather conditions and certain times when I can keep an eye on it to maybe drop on for the odd session here and there. So hopefully it might come my way this season, should I say, or next season.
Yeah, also it's like the opposite of here. You mentioned they're big enough to a dozen nights or so, and then...
Yeah. Well, this is just, you know, you can say it's luck, you can say I probably didn't deserve this one out of here, but, you know, after doing, I think I've done 100 and something nights I worked out on the North Hants Water over 3 years. And, you know, it's probably unlucky that I've not had the big one, and I've had other fish several times over. So I'm quite happy to flick the big one out of here after 12 nights. I'll take that one on the chin.
Oh, yeah, you weren't about to shake it off, were you?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Just talk about, you know, targeting. Is it well stocked, this water, with Tyson? Or
no,
there's about many friends.
No, there's about 45 fish in there, I think.
Oh, it's not overly stocked,
no. No, it's not. It's, I don't know how many I've had from there. This season just coming to an end because it's April in a few weeks. I think I counted up in the book, I think I've had 27 different captures from there, so I've had half the lake stock. But yeah, just not a big one at all. And I've seen it a few times. You know, the first time I ever saw it on the bank, I saw it 2 days previously in a swim called, well, it's sort of swim 14. It's on the edge of this arm and you sort of cast across this bay, you know, across to the far side. And I'd got up with the trees and I'd seen a few fish milling around, and then two fish just come swimming underneath me. One was really, really long, you know, a good fish. And the other one was the same sort of length, but twice as wide. And it was like, right, I know which one you are. And it was Tyson, so I dropped in swim 14. Baited up and done a night on there. And I must admit, I was... Every beep I was on it, because I knew Tyson was in the swim. And, you know, I picked up a fish first thing in the morning. A fish called the Scar at 30-something, 32, I think it was. And then I'd hooked this other fish that had just gone absolutely ballistic with on me. It just fought like a big fish. It'd gone up and down the margins and fought really hard. You know, as the rain was coming down, it was, you know, the weather was overcast. Everything just looked right, you know, for Tyson. And I was really nervous, thinking, this is Tyson. This has got to be Tyson. And this 27-pound male fish popped up. And it's just like, really? Where's the rest of you? And... It was end of March, so it was obviously getting ready for sort of spawning season. So it was, you know, the male fish are like at that time of year. They just fight a lot. They should be twice the size. Yeah, exactly. So I was thinking, right, okay, I've got this one. It's not the fish I was hoping for, but so I sort of walked to the next swim and had a look, and I could see the whole lake from the next swim, thinking, who's around to do us a quick snap? I looked around and there was a crowd gathering in the swim sort of behind. And, you know, I could see the guy was playing a fish. I thought, that's interesting. Yeah. And just then the receiver crackled off and I had another bite, so I ran back and landed a, I think it was another mid-20, just to the point one of the guys who was a bailiff on there and a mate, he popped around and says, sir, you want to come see a big fish? I'm like, what? Because he's got Tyson. I'm like, yeah. It's this photo of these two. I'll wind the other rod in and go around. So we did a couple of quick snaps, went around and saw Tyson, and there he was looking awesome and you know, big, and it's just a well-proportioned fish. He just looked absolutely cracking. And there, as he held him up for the photograph, outcoming was this orange bait. It was the hybrid. Was just before hybrid was available, so I was the only person on the lake using it. So he had been in the area, he had been feeding on my bait. And, you know, probably hooking that 27 had spooked him off, or, you know, maybe hooking the first fish had spooked him off, I don't know. But at some point, within the recent hours, he'd been chowing down on my spots, so that's probably the closest unknowingly that I've got to.
Yeah, that's very, very close.
Yeah.
So, how do you, if you go back there, well, when you do go back, what are you going to do different? Anything? You learn any, I say, timings, weather conditions, moon phases, although we all know moon phases don't mean anything?
I'm not sure. I have had quite a few big fish on a full moon. And I've had some notable captures on a sort of new moon. So I don't know whether it's pure or utter luck or whatever else. I certainly don't change the way I'm fishing because of a full moon or a new moon, but I am more confident if I do see a full moon. I mean, Choco, that always used to come out on a full moon.
Yeah.
Well, I say always, so more often than not, it came out on a full moon. Sort of either 3 days either side of full moon, it was there. I can remember one year when I was really into chasing it, and it did two different captures, both back end of the year. One in September, one in October, both of them smack on the full moon. And a lot of its captures was. So I don't know. You know, it's like the road on here. I've got no scientific proof to say that it does affect it or doesn't affect it. But, you know, us as anglers tend to piece things together and you make what makes sense of what makes sense to you. And you've probably had no experience of any big fish that you fish for coming out on a full moon, whereas I have. But again, you know, it could be completely coincidental that it had, you know, it has come out on a full moon often, as well as a few other big fish that I know.
Yeah, when I have looked into the moon phases, you know, in years back, like when I was chasing like the Fat Lady, the Willington fish was supposed to be a full moon fish, and when I've looked into it, then there's as many captures on other phases as there is on the full moon, and they just seem there's much chance on, you know, waxing gibbous than there's a full moon. So that's how much research I even know in names of your obscure phases in between.
Yeah, no, fair enough. My 10-year-old lad was dictating all to me the other day. Yeah. But mainly because he's been brought up on the Choco Moon, which is what we used to call the full moon.
The Choco Moon.
Yeah, it's the Choco Moon. And my missus knows I was grumpy if I couldn't get on the bank on the Choco Moon. So, yeah. But yeah, he knows all about his waxing gibbous and his waning whatevers.
Wheeling pheasants.
Oh, is that the one? Right, yeah. So, you know, but it's... Yeah, if you do look into it and you find that there isn't just as much chance of it coming out not on a full moon as on a full moon, i.e. 50-50, then surely there's a much better chance of it coming out on those 6 days around the full moon, if that makes any sense. That's the way I look at it anyway. And I don't know if there is any truth or non-truth in it, but you know, it's
we don't know. I joke about the moon phases and what have you, but I don't take a great deal of notice of them because I fish the same 2 days every week dictated by work.
Yeah.
You know, I can't really change that apart from the odd holidays, but the wife tends to complain when he was holidays for fishing instead of spending time with her. And again, it's something that cannot be proved. I like to see scientifical, is that a word?
Scientifical, yeah.
It is now.
I did actually look into it, and I did a bit of a Google and looked at some studies, and I found a number of studies, most of them coming from America, and one study was about dog bites in ER around the full moon, and they noticed a massive upward turn that people suffered dog bites and went to ER for dog bites around about the full moon. And there was another one about...
Werewolves?
could be werewolves. And there was another one about wolves hunting. I can't remember the exact ins and outs of it, but it was something along the lines of these wolves were tagged in North America, and their movements was tracked over the course of the night when they was hunting, and they found that they moved significantly less on a full moon to what they did on a normal moon. Now you could read a number of things into that. One, yeah,
the prey can see them.
Yeah, exactly, the prey can see them, so they tend not to bother, or they hunt more efficiently because they can see their prey, so they don't need to travel spot. Whatever. I mean, the full moon last night, and Jesus, it was bright, wasn't it? You could see everything.
You could sit and read by it.
Yeah, I mean, I kept waking up thinking it's dawn, it was that bright, which is my excuse for being tired today.
Yeah, I kept waking up thinking, my God, I'm going to have to get used to fishing next to a main road.
Honestly, in the summer, it's not too bad. Once the leaves are on the trees, it acts as a baffle, and it's a lot quieter than what it is normal. But yeah, to answer your initial question about Choco in certain times, I started fishing a little bit differently back end of last year. Because normally on there, I tend to chase shows around, and I kind of thought, well, that's probably, well, I don't know, I'd surmise that's not brought me Choco. What about Tyson? Tyson, getting Choco on the brain now. It had not brought me Tyson, so I decided to go on a bait and wait strategy, and I had a number of fishermen doing that, you know, just picking a few spots that I knew quite well, just over-baiting them in the thought that it'd attract fish in, other feeding fish would attract other feeding fish in, and you know, you sort of bigger ones like Tyson and the other chunks in there would have to feed a little bit more than your 20 to feed, so therefore I'd double the chances of catching a big one against catching a smaller fish. Whereas if you're just chasing fish around and staying on them all the time with minimal bait, then you're just picking up anything that's there. So I tried that for a bit, and I had a few fish, but again, none of the none of the chunks and not Tyson. But I have. There is certain times of year when he does tend to put in an appearance. But I won't put that in the carp cast until I've caught it, because the weekend a few weeks I'm planning to get down there, we'll probably be busy as hell, with people. Worked out what I've worked out, so yeah.
Don't worry too much. Nobody listens to this. Yeah. So what other plans have you got in your future? You've got, you've had the bigging out of air. You said yesterday it's not quite the same. There's not as much motivation as enthusiasm.
No,
there's a lot of other biggins.
Yeah, I know when I'm on the water where I'm chasing the chunk, and you're nervous about every single beat. And our first night, I just cooked us a chicken pasta and just getting ready to tuck in when the rod ripped off, and I was quite annoyed by that, to be honest. And in them sort of situations that you've, I won't say necessarily lost the bug for the place, but it's not got that buzz about it anymore for you. There's plenty of other fish that I want to catch. There's a fully scaled on here, which is an absolute stunner.
Oh, yes.
And I'm hoping that its next capture will be over 40 pounds. Looking at previous captures now, how much it's putting on each year, then the chances are it will be. And there's my other absolute crackers in here. But I think it's just a sort of mental block in my head. I've had the big one now, so it's a case of, it's almost telling me what am I doing on here. But I am keeping the ticket just for the winter sessions, and maybe a few socials, and maybe the odd feature and whatever else, because it's great for features. You can come down here and you've got a really good chance of catching. And with yourself being on here next winter, and Martin Wassell as well, I can see us having a nice little social at some point.
Yeah, just one.
Well,
I see being a social every other week.
Yeah.
I was on the folly last year, and whenever I pull in the car park, I see Martin's van there, and he was, it gave me an headache knowing he was there. You'd walk around, you'd not even sat down, and he's swimming, he's thrust a can into your hand.
Yeah, he don't mind a beer or two, mate.
Nah,
he's a good lad.
And he catches a few.
Yeah, he's done right on folly, hasn't he? He's had them all several times over.
Yeah, I think there's just one or two of the big ones is, man, I think I've dropped his ticket this year.
Yeah, I don't think he wanted to. I think he wanted to carry on fishing because he loved it that much, but I think he's gathered a few waters and it's time to, go on to his next one.
Yeah, that's got quite a few tickets, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been collecting.
Yeah, you can only fish one at a time.
Exactly. I do like to have two waters, though, saying that, because, things can go awry on one water, and that's when you drift onto another one, especially if you're fishing for one target fish. If your target fish comes out of the water, you sort of left it a bit of a quandary of what to do. Do you go back on there and everybody's going to get caught in short succession, or do you sort of drift off for a few weeks and then drop onto another water? So I think it's always beneficial to have a second water. And, around about spawning time as well, if they're looking a little bit spawny on one water and the other water's, say, considerably deeper, or they've already spawned. And, I do like to switch and change between waters around spawning time.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. I've got this place, and then obviously I consider Aiken like my home venue, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I just go back there and play there. It's about the best way of putting it.
No, it is a nice water. I fished it with it, and it's just that cracking big expanse of water. And it's one of the places I understand why you like it. You can just get lost there.
Yeah, definitely. I do. Getting lost is one of my favourite things, to be honest. So there's times where you just have enough bullshit in the real world. You just want to disappear. Switch your phone off.
Yeah, I must admit, I've not fished a big water for a little while now. Not on a campaign sort of basis.
Obviously,
I've done fen drayton, I've done Stone Acre, which is 50 odd acres. I've had a little play on Rockford, which is 50, 60 acres, I think. That was a little bit too far for me to go, 180 odd mile.
That's a long round trip.
Yeah, I think it's over six hour round trip. It's hard work. It's hard work, so. But yeah, I do fancy having a little play on somewhere a little bit bigger.
Yeah, it's a different sort of fishing. I mean, you can get away with a lot more. By that I mean baiting.
Mm.
Yeah. If you do it right, you can do it in an area where you just—it's not going to be left alone. It's not going to be fished when you're not there. Whereas there's no point in baiting up here for yourself after the end of a session, because.
Somebody's going to go in, or you're going to be upsetting somebody else's fishing. So, these bigger, quieter waters are great for that. I used to do a lot of baiting on Stone Acre, You know, I used to walk around with a bucket, and the bucket had a catapult in it, and everybody thought, oh, he's just had a bucket to mark a swim for a fancy to move. But, you know, it wasn't necessarily that. It'd be a few handfuls of bait in this little corner, a few handfuls of bait in that little corner. And, you know, and over the course of the year, all those little spots that I found kept primed and paid dividends, you know. Most of them for me, few of them for mates that sort of dropped in the swim that were struggling, and, you know, you just sort of point them in the right direction, and, you know, they'd done right off them. So, you know, just these obscure little corner swims that nobody, you know, tends to bother with. If the fish do get stacked up in there, you can quite easily just go flick, flick with two rods, fishing on spots that have seen constant bait over a long period of time, and, you know, that certainly helps out. Same with Burfield. You know, I spent a lot of time walking around the Dog Leg and all those little channels and bays and islands, just keeping bait trickling in on certain spots, just to keep them primed, you know, ready for when the fish did drift into those sort of areas. It goes a long, long way. Fish find a free food source in a certain area, then that makes your job a lot easier when you come to put a hook bait down there.
Yeah, they're going to keep coming back and coming back, and knowing they can eat safe.
Yeah, and they're not going to swim across some bait that's not seen there before, thinking what's going on here. Obviously, that bait that's always there every week, just dropping another little feed.
Yeah, you never tempted to go back to Burfield? Because I better be honest, after I spoke to Oz Holness on the podcast, that got me wanting to fish it.
you put it on a level playing field, like I had it for the first few months when I first got on there. You can fish the old lake without any real sort of restrictions. Then yeah, I would be back on there in a flash. But things keep changing down there constantly. There's been so much out of bounds on there for the last 2 years, and out of bounds has changed again. As far as I can gather off the grapevine, they've got one swift back, but lost another three. So there's a lot of out of bounds there, and a lot of areas that the fish can hide. And it's changed from being a walking, looking, finding tight water to, it can be a sort of bait and wait, you know. And apparently bait boats are allowed back on there now, so it's going to be a scenario where people are going to be bait boating out to the centre, dropping a shed load of bait and just sitting there waiting, which, to be honest, I can do that, you know, on a session or a couple of sessions, and I've done it on a few sessions, but over a period of time it just balls the hell out of me. It really does. And I was doing that towards the end of the time on Burfield, and I was catching quite a lot, probably more than what I've caught from wandering around looking and finding, but I just found it boring. And you know, you're looking at the same bit of water week in, week out. There's no excitement about fish showing, there's no excitement about searching them and working out a scenario. It's just, the only excitement is when that rod goes off, so you're just sitting there waiting for that rod to go with nothing else to really do. You can't go anywhere because the rods are out, they're out at long range on a little tiny spot, and you're just sort of sitting there for 2 days. It's just
Yeah, and I suppose you'd be sitting there thinking, is that big common in the corner of the whatever bay?
Yeah, it could be down the Dog Leg. It could be best part of a mile away or something, really, you know, by the time you go around the channels and this, that, and the other, backwards and forwards. So, yeah, so it's a cracking water, and that fish is by far the best fish in the country for me, you know, in terms of age and prestige and heritage and whatever else. And I would like to catch it one day, but not being able to fish the entire lake does tend to put me off a little bit.
Yeah, you like a bit of freedom to actually fish and to hunt.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than being constricted. That's totally understandable. So, do you think you'll ever find that perfect water with big fish where you can pretty much
I don't know. I mean, you know, Burfield was getting towards being that brilliant water. Stone Acre was fantastic. I loved it on Stone Acre. It was great. You know, you could use boats, and that's my sort of angling. But I'm always looking, and I think I've been spoiled a little bit by going on places like Stone Acres and Christchurch, because the fish on there are sort of second to none. I can't think of another complex where the fish are quite that nice. Yeah. And ever since leaving Stone Acre, I've been sort of chasing the water with these big ancient scalers in, you know, where I can do a similar sort of fishing to on there. And I've just not found it, to be honest. This Fendrated looked pretty good for a while, but you know, the floods of, what was it, 2012 didn't really help that place, and you know, it sprayed the stock out a little bit. But that's another cracking water that I enjoyed fishing. Yeah, it did, yeah. You know, and I think the Clyne, which was probably one of the best fish in the country around about that time, that kind of disappeared somewhere, whether it went down the river, whether it ended in a ditch or what, I don't know, but it's not been seen since.
That could be in the river, it could be in a nature reserve living its days out.
It could be anywhere, couldn't it? It could be in an old fish pond 3 miles downriver or something like that, or you know, sitting in a marina somewhere slurping bread off the side of a barge. You just don't know. Yeah,
it's interesting when you look around that, especially that area, when you date back, how many fish in that area can be dated back to your early wool pack fish?
Yeah, yeah.
Because like, you had cluster in the wool pack, Pac-Man in Ferry.
Yep.
That big scale in, that was in Fen.
Yep.
I believe was previously in Swavesey.
Yep.
Yeah, which obviously got moved by a previous flood. There's no other way of it moving.
Yeah,
obviously. And they can all be traced back to the wool pack.
Yeah.
They're all very, very similar fish. And the floods just, I say, shuffled the pack.
Yeah, there's loads of them in, you know, scale fish in the field.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, as we're speaking now, wool pack is probably, what, 300 yards behind us, next to the ewes, and then Fendrator, yeah. And Sir Tives, and all those are a mile or so downstream, 2 mile downstream, something like that. Yeah. So,
not a great deal in it.
No, it's not. It's not.
I think it's about a 5 mile difference by road.
Yeah.
Go in quite a detour.
Yeah. So now it's, you know, fish do naturally spread themselves out a little bit, and it can be devastating for the water that floods and loses the stock, but it can also be massively beneficial, you know, to sort of thin the herd out a little bit, to give the growers a chance to grow and to get to be big fish.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, back in the day, Elster 1 used to be a bit of a commercial runs water by all accounts, and I think... well, it's not really by natural causes, but I think those fish got spread all around Bedfordshire for, you know, I won't say every single water, but a lot of the waters up and down in Bedfordshire have been stocked by Elster 1 at some point.
Elster 1 fish come walk, didn't you know? But yeah, I know what you're saying. I mean, look at even the old record, Mary, that came from, was it Rainers or some other place?
I'm not sure. I was told it got moved in there. Yeah.
Yeah, it was moved in with the cluster of Mallins. I'm sure it's written down in a book somewhere. I know up near me is a lake I used to fish years back, Thorpe Marsh Power Station Pond.
Right.
And half the fish in there were named after the lake that we nicked from.
Yeah, you do get it from time to time, but you know, luckily these days, in this day and age, people tend not to move fish. I think there's a little bit goes on, certainly from nature reserves and rivers and whatnot, but
yeah.
I think it, you know, back in the 60s, 70s, there were fish being moved from one fishery to another fishery, which in my mind is a little bit naughty.
Yeah,
I mean, that is, naughty. I won't say that stopped because it hasn't. You know, I can name several fish that have rocked up somewhere that they probably shouldn't have done. But it's certainly reduced, and you're certainly not looking over your shoulder thinking if someone nicks my fish. But you're probably looking over your shoulder thinking, has I not nipped in the winter and had it? But, you know, at least you're not worried about somebody actually stealing it. That's the sort of thing I like, you know, in the Stone Acres fish, that sort of typical shape and scaling pattern and everything else, you know, that's what fires me up.
Yeah, I know what you mean. When you mention Stone Acres, there's one that springs into mind. Is it like the number 9 bus?
Yeah.
Is that its right name?
Yeah, it's a cracking fish.
Yeah. Did you have that one?
Yeah, I had it a couple of times. Yeah, it was...
Show off.
First time I had it, I was blown away. It was a fish that was generally normally at mid-30 when I joined, and I'd photographed it for a mate in my first ever session on there at 34 pound, and the very next capture was me the following spring at 39, so it just literally shot through the ranks. I think it'd done sort of 36s previously, but yeah, it just sort of shot up and 39 pound, and I just couldn't believe it. You know, it was one of them. I'd netted it from the bank because it was early season, so the weed wasn't too bad, and I'd put the net down and I sort of drew it over the net cord and drew it and kept drawing. I think it's not even half in the net yet, it's just that long and its nose unspread a block before I could lift the net and get the whole thing in there. It was just incredible.
It is a weird, really weird shaped thing, that one.
It's just long and scaly, it's like a triple road linear, and it's just unbelievable fishing.
I think there's a bit of barbel in its jeans.
It could be, yeah.
It's not long.
It could be, yeah. But that's got certain characteristics, and all the time I was on there, it only came out of one bank. Up and down, yeah. Nobody had it from the far bank.
Territorial.
Yeah, and it was quite long. You know, I only came from Calf Bay, which is one side, and I had it, the second time I had it, was right up the top end in the far corner, but it always come from that one half of the lake, it never come from the other half of the lake, which was quite weird.
Interesting. Is it bigger than near territorial? Tell me where that gets caught from.
It's out of this one last.
Right then. Bring it on.
No excuses, Mark, no excuses.
Oh, I've got plenty of excuses. I've been recycling them all time and time again.
Well, it's the five fish hit at the weekend. including a 41, so you know, it's yeah, the swim.
And the fella between blind.
Yeah, the fella between blind.
So I just want to get that one in. Now I have been busy doing other things, not 100% fishing.
Yeah, you never caught on it, you never fish.
See, I'm giving excuses out already. I speak about what we're doing. You're a media gaffer for Chubb and Gray's.
Yes.
So tell us, what goodies have you got coming to market, Savile? Because
I've already mentioned the carp care kit that we've got. We've got a load of new mats and slings and whatever else. There's a couple of nice slings, actually. I'm using the mesh one today, and it converts into a sack. You know, you just undo this little zip, you can pop the arms out, and it changes from a flotation waist sling into just a normal zip sack. So, you know, if you've got a water that allows sacks and, you know, you've not got a great deal of weed in the margin, you know, you can actually sack a fish rather than retain it, you know, in a flotation sling. So that's quite a useful bit of kit. Plus, as well, it weighs next to nothing as well. You know, just being
that's
mesh.
Good.
Yeah, and it doesn't retain a great deal of water. Just, you know, you do see it from time to time on these, commercial type lakes where, you know, somebody weighs a fish and it's half water, half fish, and it's trying to call the weight of the fish before it's drained properly. So that drains straight away. That's great. We've got another more conventional flotation sling. And then we've got an oxygenation flotation sling that's got a little air pump on the top.
I've seen that one. That's had a few interesting comments on social media.
It's been quite controversial. I got it last year in the summer when we was doing some filming up at a lake in the Cotswolds. And, you know, I'd caught a couple of fish whilst we had it to do some photography and filming on. And we put the fish in the sling, and you know, every time I had a look in there or put the GoPro in there to see what was going on and to film the fish, it was sitting there with the air going through its gills. So it's, you know, whether it was by accident or whether it just knew it was more comfortable and there's more oxygen up that end of the sling or what, I don't know. But it sat there with the oxygen going through it, you know, the air going through its sling. So, I just think it's one of these little products that can help, you know, if the water's low oxygen, you know, in the prime of summer, because you shouldn't retain them anyway. But quite often, a fish will benefit from being held back and be able to chill out just for a few minutes in a sling before you return it. You know, I know places like Gigantica that I fish quite a bit, they encourage you getting a bucket full of water and just tipping it over a fish's head before you release it, just to push a load of oxygen through the gills. And this product does a similar sort of thing, and to my mind, it does a great job. But like I said, it's been slated on social media because people have got the wrong end of the stick, thinking, oh, you've got to oxygenate the whole lake with a little, you know, live air pump, which it's not about that to me. It's about putting the air right in where the fish is sitting and pushing through the gills, and they can pull a bit of oxygen from the water that way. And that's all it is to me. And if it's a product that saves a few fish's lives over the course of the year, then to me it's well worth it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. It's also, it shouldn't be used as an excuse for retaining fish for overly long times either.
But you sort of hope that people use common sense when retaining fish. You know, you know, when flotation slings first came about, you know, they were slated because people were, you know, keeping them overnight, which is not the one at all. You know, if you catch a fish, then you know, I don't mind, you know, retaining a fish or sacking a fish for a short period of time when it gets light. But if I catch it at night, you know, like, you know, on the first night down here, we had a fish about 9 o'clock, and we did a couple of snaps and slipped it back straight away. Well, after having my dinner anyway.
Yeah.
It's getting cold. Which, you know, kind of leads me on to a few other products that we've got. You know, we've got all the new cookware items that I cooked the chicken pasta up with on the first night.
Yeah, that was very nice, thank you.
I know you quite like one of them, the coffee maker, where you can have ground coffee on the bank.
Yeah, I'll have to get one of those in my kit. I do like my coffee, and if I can have proper filtered coffee on the bank in the bivvy,
there you go.
That's got to be done.
It's almost like having a Costa on the bank. So now that's quite nice, and some of the little burners and stuff are quite useful. Bits of kit. There's a nice folding kettle, which is great if you're travelling light and you're trying to reduce all your kit down. So yeah, there's some nice products here. A few nice bivvies coming to market. There's a Cyfish coming out. Well, in fact, they're already out. There's four bivvies in the range. There's a one-man bivvy, a two-man bivvy, which both come with an overwrap included.
Included?
Yeah, that's included, good. Yeah. And then you've got the domes, which has got your full little capsule already inside. So, you know, once you're all zipped up, you're not going to get a creepy crawly or a mosquito anywhere near you. which is great for, you know, if you're taking the missus fishing. I know the Continental boys absolutely love them because they have a few things that are slightly more hazardous than our little beetles, you know. They don't want a snake crawling in there in the middle of the night, which is understandable, really.
Yeah, definitely. I don't even like grass snakes, and they're harmless.
Yeah, I can remember I was fishing Little Urchester, and I'm quite a grassy swim. No ground sheet or anything like that, and I was feeling around in my kit bag and around for keys that I dropped behind my bed chair, and I felt something. What the hell was that? Looked around to see all the grass pot and a tail of a snake disappearing out. I'm thinking, Jesus, I've been under my bed chair all night. So yeah, the little critters. We've got quite a few new products that are coming out. I mean, Gray's got two new sets of rods out, replacing the old Prodigies. So we've got the Prodigy GT4s and the Prodigy Apexes. Now the Apexes are quite interesting because I know you've got Gray's rods. They've actually got nanotechnology in them. Which is product of the week called Torian, and it's a great product for making the rod lighter, stronger, with a faster tip recovery speed, and it's the same material that the air curve's got in it, but it's nowhere near the price point of an air curve. You know, it's sub £200, and because technology's moved on, we'll be able to do it. I'm not pretending that, you know, the cheaper versions of the air curves, because they're not. You know, to my mind, the air curve's one of the best rods I've ever used, and certainly best available rod I've ever used. The Apexes aren't a million miles behind them, for a decent affordable price point. So, you know, I rate them quite highly, and I've spoke to a lot of people at shows that bought them, and I'm quite pleased with them as well. So that's a promising sign.
Yeah, great stuff. And if they're, well, I say they're not far behind the air curves, they're going to be spot on, because I've had the air curves not much more than a year myself, and well, I've managed not to break them yet, so that's a testament to their toughness.
But yeah, that could be part of the nanotechnology that's in, because, you know, a lot of the carbon as a material, if you get a slight knock on it or drop it on a disabled swim or a stone or something like that.
I'm glad you said disabled swimmer, not disabled person.
Yeah, I mean, these concrete swims can be absolutely terrible for rods if you just crack it on a bit of concrete. But the thing with them is, what happens is you cause these tiny little micro cracks, which doesn't cause an issue initially with the rod. You know, it looks fine and it performs fine, but that crack over time, over use, over casting, over bending into fish, just gets more and more and more, and that's when the rod will just inexplicably break on a 50 yard cast, and people take them back to the tackle shop and say, oh, you know, this rod's gone off because it's, you know, and I didn't put it through any pressure. It was that initial drop, or that initial micro crack that started, that caused it all. Whereas the nanotech in the Torian and the air curves and now in the Apexes, they do tend to inhibit these little micro cracks. So the cracks in the resin around the carbon will reach one of these nanoparticles and stop the crack from getting any worse. So that's why the air curves are a little bit stronger than a lot of other rods.
That's interesting. So these Apexes, are they available in all the usual lengths and test curves?
Yeah, the 13-foot, 3.5. Whole range of 12 foot versions in 40 or 50 foot rings, and even do a little 10 footer as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they are good.
Nice for the snide.
I wouldn't know anything about that. I don't fish snides.
Well, you're that good. You're that good at hiding it.
Or that dishonest.
Yeah, that's why it's coming into that time of year where it becomes a lot easier to hide the snide rod, but the vegetation comes back up.
Yeah, hard work in winter.
Yeah, and on that note, before we get ourselves into any more trouble, Ed, thanks for your time again.
No problem. And sorry I couldn't get a carp bite live on the Carpcast, but we did get a pike. Good pike, even though we didn't land it. Never mind.
Next time, Ed.
Next time.
Check out the website at www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.